You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. And today is part two of our super long, week-long mailbag series we got going on. As always, I am one of the hosts of your show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News. And over at 8.9 seconds, Adam Friedman on the other line, my co-host with Indy Corners. Adam, how are you, man?
You almost called me 8.9 seconds writer, didn't you?
I did. I caught it, though.
You're welcome. I could hear your voice. Sorry.
I was gonna throw in a, are you also mourning about IU? But then so many ideas went through my head for that intro, and I went with none of them. So,
well, one time I did a podcast, I started it, and I accidentally called Caitlin Cooper, who I work with at Indie Corners, 8.9 seconds, and then I was like,
oh god.
She said something. She's like, hey Adam, you want to restart? And I'm like, yes, my bad.
JJ called me the Indie Corners writer that one time when he had my Lance.
Yes, on live television for audience of multiple millions of people.
That was so funny.
He felt so bad he came on the podcast.
Yeah, IU just had more rebounds than points in a game. So
they lost to Purdue. I saw they're playing Purdue. That's about all.
Yeah, they only gave up 48 and they lost at home. So yeah, they suck.
To be honest, I'm about, 9 days away from caring about college basketball?
Yeah, it's the 19th. Yeah, I'm also 9 days away. This is the second full game I've watched end-to-end this year of college basketball.
I'm trying to think why I've watched a single.
The other one was IU Notre Dame. So
I watched the Syracuse-Duke game because I wanted to watch Zion, and yep. I wanted to watch Syracuse because
I have yet to watch a Zion game. I mean, I feel like I see every possession of his on Bleacher Report. So
you see enough, I'm sure.
All right, well, we'll jump into the questions now because that's what mailbags are all about. First one, we're going to ease in. No hard-hitting free agency or analysis on question one, but I actually like this question. Morgan Webster, at Morgan J. Webster says, he's telling us, he's not asking us, I like this. Power rank all six of the current Pacers uniforms.
Ooh, okay, I got to pull up what they
last look like. Gray, done. That's easy.
Yeah.
Gray is six, and I have a favorite, so I can do number one, too, if you don't mind.
The six uniforms are
the white version of the gray one, hickory, and then blue, white, yellow.
Okay, hickory, blue, white, yellow. Okay. I'm writing that because I have to visualize this.
My number one is, I forget what they're called, the earned edition, the one they got for being in the playoffs. It's the white version of the gray one. That's my favorite. Then yellow. Then the other white one, then blue, then hickory, then gray. I hate hickory and gray, but gray is so much worse.
Yeah, so hickory and gray are my bottom two for sure. Coming in at number four would probably be yellow. I just think it's kind of a little bit in your face, and to be honest.
It's bright.
Yeah, and the stripes are more visible in kind of a weird way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like the yellow and blue. I just like color.
Yeah, I just don't like – I just don't like the stripes on the all That's yellow fair. One. Then is probably the white alternative one for the gray, whatever that
okay.
earned one. Wow. Then normal white and normal blue. I think I just like the blue the best.
I mean, I think average ranked the highest. Or white, actually. Standard white the highest.
What did you have blue at?
At blue two. Or at blue three.
Okay. I just like the blue. They have a really good blue color. Like I own a couple Pacers stuff and like they're both blue.
Kind of I believe they've had two games this year. I remember the Bulls for sure, and I cannot remember, but I know the Pelicans, where it was gray versus white. I was like, this sucks. This is so gross.
Yeah, I went to the Grizzlies game, and they wore their gray jerseys, and I thought the Grizzlies should have worn their gray one, too. Yeah, that was
like baby blue.
Well, the Grizzlies have the same gray uniform as them, too.
Yeah, they do.
Would have been kind of crazy, gray on gray. I guess it would have been a non-colorblind person's dream or nightmare because it would have been all colorblind.
Every Grizzlies person I follow on Twitter hates their gray jerseys too.
So also, maybe, you know what I realized? Why the Pacers can't go all red hickory?
I don't.
Because of the colorblind thing when the NFL
did. Oh, that. You're right. Those color rush jerseys from the NFL, that was funny. Well, my problem with the hickory, they look okay, like in general. I like the white ones a lot better because the Pacers aren't red. They're just not red. I hate it.
Yeah, the gold shorts are a little cheesy for me.
That too.
It's also, have you been
– That's novelty, though.
I mean, I know this is the Bill Simmons thing, but have you ever been pointed out how kind of subtly racist Hoosiers is?
Yeah, we'll not get into that here.
I know. I'm just saying, kind of ruined the whole thing for me.
I wonder what their I'm very curious what their next city jersey is going
to
be. But
what I just want to say, it's crazy though that they the Crispick Attic uniforms are not the like ones they want to copy, because that's the really legendary Indiana team. I mean, like that team.
Yeah.
So the Hickory team beat the Crispick Attic team, who won the title the next year as the first all black team. So
look at Adam here for the history lessons.
Well, I mean, I just looked it up after I watched Hoosiers. Probably I watch it every year at least.
And my hot take with this podcast is that it is a terrible movie.
I don't think it's a terrible movie. I think that's wrong. I think it's just got some flaws, but also it was made what, late 90s?
Yeah, it's pretty old.
And back then they didn't have quite the world viewpoint we have now and the kind of awareness, and then they would have changed it a little bit, I'm sure, to be less weird.
All right. Next question two. I like that topic, though. That was a fun start. Question two is kind of similar to one we had in the last episode, for those who haven't listened, from Kyle at Covote13, COVOTE13. Says, being behind the other four East teams in playoff viability, but a hot streak away from taking a series from any of them, how would you rank the potential series in win potential? Which series would be the most entertaining? I don't hate our underdog chances against the Celtics or 76ers. We talked about last time that I think they have the best chance against the Bucks, and Adam thinks they have the best chance against the Celtics, right?
Yes, correct. Yep.
So I don't think anything has changed in the
two days of
no game since we recorded.
Let's take the most entertaining part. We haven't done that yet.
That is a good one. Most entertaining.
Just Sixers, pick one. Probably. You don't need to rank them.
Sixers.
Sixers?
Yeah.
I think I lean the same way. I just think the Sixers are kind of one of those teams that's always like – I guess Embiid always complaining or trying to start stuff. Butler's got the same personality a little bit. I think it could just be, you know, what was it when Turner blocked Embiid or then Joe Young stole the ball from him? He basically went down and clubbed Joe Young in the head, essentially, on a play a couple years ago. And so I could just see some kind of thing like that happening. You know, you get
Sabonis dunked on Embiid. Miles flipped off the crowd in Philly. Like, there's some character there.
Yeah, and the Philly crowd is kind of like, it's purposely mean. Like, that's just like the Philly way.
It's
The problem is if they're not better than them, so it's going to end in kind of like this annoying way. But it would be fun, I think, a little bit. I mean, anybody else they play, I mean, like, I hate Boston personally. It's just me. But, I mean, I don't know.
I think Toronto would be fun, but I feel like everyone else would not like that one just because all their, like, big names are quiet dudes, you know?
Yeah. Toronto would be frustrating. They
would lose. They'd get swept, probably.
No, probably. I don't think it's swept by anybody. I think they win a game against anybody just because they're a really good home team.
I think Kawhi is just – that team is so good to me.
But they're 22-7 home, the Pacers. They're a good home team. They got a good crowd. They got a really good crowd.
They already beat the Raptors at home once.
Yeah, just saying.
That was a good question. I liked the wrinkle of the entertaining there. That way we get some opinions in instead of just – we get an extra layer of opinions in there.
Yeah.
All right, next one's from my Photoshop guy, Dom. At Dom Hit 'Em Up says, although it's been touched upon, do you think Miles has a legitimate chance of actually winning Defensive Player of the Year and not just being a candidate? Jim Aiello literally posted an article addressing this issue about 2.5 hours ago. We in Pacerland probably all think he is a worthy candidate and it should be in the discussion. On the national stage, no, he's not a candidate.
Yeah, he's going to probably finish fourth.
Yeah, he'll be top five, but he definitely will not win. That's what Jim said. That was like a great point. You know, you have to have the defensive pedigree to be considered. You know, this is his first year being in the elite tier, so next year he'll have a much better chance. But like your first year being elite, you just don't win. Like Draymond didn't win his first year being elite. Rudy Gobert didn't. Kawhi didn't. Like it takes the second year of everyone knowing you're good and still.
Yeah, because most of the voters don't watch defense that much. So
yes,
and there aren't good stats to capture it.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, the blocks will vault him into that category because he'll be the leader in blocks, but that'll be it.
Yeah, and it's hard at center, too. You know, like Paul George has a good case and Giannis because they're good.
What could happen if a national media person starts pushing for him?
Yeah.
That, like if a Zach Lowe, for example, or if he starts pushing for him, I think he could win. But I think that's what it would take. I'm not sure Zach Lowe even thinks Miles is a defensive player of the year. So
exactly. We're on the same page. That one's tough, too, because obviously, like, everyone who listens watches most of the Pacers games, so their opinion of him is obviously very high. But in the grand scheme of people who watch not every Pacers game, you never know.
And I think playing in the East handicaps a lot of these players for their awards because there's four just terrible teams in the East. And in the West, there's 14 good teams at least.
Yeah. Well, 13 now that AD might not play the rest of the year.
Okay, so there's 13 good teams. There's no bad. There's one bad team. I mean, there are four bad teams in the East, and then probably six teams you could kind of put somewhere in the middle.
It makes me laugh so hard when they show the West standings and they just disclude the Suns from the graphics.
How many games back at the Suns now? 30, 40?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I mean, the Suns
they're not even worse than the Cavs. They're just like, yeah, this is a joke. We're not wasting.
The reason the Suns have the hardest schedule in the NBA is because they don't get to play themselves.
Because they can't play themselves. All right, this one, I have a screenshot of two tweets, so I'm going to have to parse through this as I read it. The first one, NBA polls at leading NBA polls says, which of the free agent point guards are the Pacers try to bring back next year, Collison or Joseph, or neither? If neither, who are some potential point guards they should look at? And then a follow-up comment from Indie Sports Fan at Indie Sports Dude says, the Collison versus Joseph debate is so tough, and I always hop back and forth. So I want them to resign. I'm interested to hear their answer. It is a tough debate, and we've had it on here. I think if Collison was 28, he would win, but he's not.
I think also it depends what they think of Aaron Holiday. Because if they think Holiday's a year away, I actually think Collison's a better bridge point guard for one more season.
That's fair. Because, yeah, that is actually a good point.
Joseph's just destiny. I mean, this is to be the sixth man off the bench. I mean, that's his role. That's his role in the NBA. He'll play that role
He plays it well.
I mean, I feel like he's like a Sean Livingston, where that's just like going to be his career, and he'll make $10 million a year doing that for eight more years, and he'll make plenty of money, and he'll play a long career and whatever. But I feel like if you're looking for like trying to get one more really good year, Collison can kind of give you that one more good year. The problem is, though, that Joseph is still probably the better player than Collison. But he's probably going to be more expensive. So then, like I said, if you're trying to bridge to Holiday, maybe think Holiday can be this trying to poker by mid next year, then Collison might be the answer.
I think me and you are in a small corner of Pacers Twitter who think Kojo is better, but I love our corner.
Really? You think? Yeah. That seems weird to me.
I know. I think Kojo is awesome. If he didn't throw up 10 floaters a week.
Collison has his advantage. Collison is a clutch player. Collison just is kind of, I guess, more of a leader might be the right word, but he can do things offensively that Kojo can't, but Kojo can meet his offense 75-80% there and is such a better defender that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love Kojo. You have a good point about the bridge. If they get neither back, we talked about some guys last episode, if you want to go back. But the point guard market is weird because there's like a big drop. There's like tier A with Kyrie and such, and then tier B is like one guy. And it might even be a 2C guy with Bledsoe, and then Dragic, and then nothing. So
if they were to trade for a guy like Holiday or Conley in space, would they sell the room to re-sign Joseph if they re-sign, let's say, Thad and Bogdan, or would they be out of room?
It depends on the order of events.
So there's a way that could happen.
I think so.
Because like you could see them doing that possibly, right? I mean, they basically run. I mean, those are the three guys that they would
use your space to get a point, re-sign everyone else that you can fit.
Yeah. So you're basically upgrading Collison to a better player, you're keeping everything else the same, and that honestly is probably a pretty good team if you could figure out.
I guess Kemba's in tier one too. Sorry, I forgot Kemba.
Okay, but I'm talking about like one of the guys that's not making. Well, I guess
right. The guys you take into space between.
Yeah, Kemba wouldn't work.
No, he's a free agent.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's getting probably $200 million. So.
No, he definitely is, because the Hornets will say, we have nothing if you're gone, so please.
Yeah, man, that'll be the first. I mean, one of the first tests of like Boogie was probably the other one until he got hurt. But like, do you really pay the guy that Cutter can offer him, or do you try to find somewhere that's a little more reasonable in the middle?
The Wizards tried to get cute and reasonable without a Porter, and then he got maxed out.
And then you just let him walk.
Turned out to be way too much money.
You just let him walk then. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, they out of Porter. Him. Big thing. What was 8% trade kicker you had in there?
They needed him. 15%. Yeah.
You had 15%. Holy crap.
Yeah. The Nets did whatever they could to get that dude.
Otto Porter's just family is going to be so rich for so long.
He's killing it for the Bulls. They've unleashed Otto Porter.
I mean, his great grandson's going to have $1 million. I mean, that's how much money he's going to make his 4 years in the NBA. And he's probably going to
pay my heritage for not having made the NBA. Yeah. Someone in the lower, like, Cut out the Kemba tier, and then anyone below that is reasonable. It's so hard to guess, though.
Yeah, I guess I don't see them getting signed to replace both guys with some not top tier guy. So, like, if they're gonna get rid of both, it's because they're gonna major upgrade. If they're not, they're gonna bring one and then a minor upgrade back. I can see them replacing one with a minor upgrade, but they're not gonna get rid of both guys just for a minor upgrade.
I agree. Next question. I wonder how close this is in terms of exact phraseology to one from last episode, but it's still a fun one to go through. Out of all the Pacers' expiring contracts this summer, could you rank most important to least important to bring back or who you think they should re-sign? We both have Bojan, Thad, 1-2 in that order. The next three is whoever you prefer between Kojo, DC,
and... Hey, Quinta free agent too, Tony.
What?
A Quinta free agent.
Ah, yes. Okay, here's a fun one. Well, I'll add a wrinkle to this question. Who would you rather bring back, Kyle Quinn or Tyreek Evans?
Kyle Quinn.
I think my answer is O'Quinn as well.
I mean, because it's cheaper. O'Quinn at four is fine. I mean, he's in the room exception again, you're good.
You could use Non-Bird to pay him more than the room exception and then have the room exception.
But who's going to pay him more than the room exception?
No, nobody. You're right.
I mean, you could probably pay him less than the room exception if you really wanted to.
You could, and you call it Non-Bird and stay over the cap to do it. Brilliant. Yeah, so he's above Tyreek there, but he's not above anyone else for me.
Well, can you do that and then still have your room exception?
Yeah. Ooh, as long as you don't, you have to designate it. So as long as you don't just say it's the room exception, you're good.
Nice. That might be worth it.
That fancy schmancy. I agree. That might be worth it. Yeah, being able to sign a guy to more than a minimum deal is a nice little tool. Yeah, Tyreek's last. It's like he's been playing better and stuff and kind of fitting in, but yeah, it's not snug enough and it's just, you know, it's a bad
thing. It hasn't really worked out. I mean, there's not enough games to make it really work unless he's like incredible the last 28 games. So,
and his brother and family are so involved in his life and think it's been terrible. So that.
Yeah, I don't think him and I honestly don't think him and the coaching staff fit.
Yeah, there's a lot of
that's what it feels like to me. But
I'm with you there.
He seems like, I mean, I don't want to, but based on all the other players the Pacers have, he's just not the same kind of like what undervalued like chip on a shoulder kind of guy, I guess. He doesn't have it. I mean, I think Tyreek was the top five guy out of high school, the top five pick. Yeah, he had like the NBA career, but he's never really been like the chip on a shoulder. Like you got Collison and Thad are undersized for their position. You got Kojo, who probably was never believed in. And Kojo's from France, right? Is that where he comes from? Play basketball?
Kojo is from Texas, Canada.
Where do you play basketball originally? Who did he play for? Who does he play for in the national? It's Canada, right?
Yeah, Canada. I said that.
Okay. I don't know why I said France. I knew he played
for. I don't know why you said France.
Maybe because Quebec. That was probably the link in my head.
Did you know Corey Joseph's middle name is Ephraim?
No, I didn't.
Ephraim.
But like, you know, I mean, he's got
a chip on his shoulder. I've never heard that middle name before.
Yeah, he's got a chip on his shoulder. I mean, it just, if Bojan's got a chip on his shoulder, clearly, I mean, a guy who people thought maybe couldn't even make the league someday. Like, they have all these guys who have chips on the shoulder, and Tyreek kind of doesn't feel like the kind of guy that has that mentality.
Hebrew name. It's a Hebrew name, but I'm with you on the...
Okay, sorry, Tony. You're still stuck on the name, and I've just moved on way past it. But like, think about it. Name one Pacer player, right? I mean, there's... Almost every Pacers player you make an argument, they have a chip on their shoulder, except for maybe Turner. Turner's the only one you can make the argument not for.
I'm with you there.
Oladipo, Sabonis, all of them.
You have a good point. He just doesn't, something doesn't click, and who knows what it is, and he won't be back. I just, like, I'm almost certain he just won't be back.
Yeah, I think he's, unfortunately.
Next up, I love this.
More like, fortunately, not coming back.
He's been helpful, just not nearly as helpful as that. Adam Conti at Miles Mutombo. I love that, Miles Mutombo. It says, if the Pacers were to do a three-point contest, dunk contest, and skills challenge amongst only Pacers players, who would win each contest? And then he also adds, enjoying the pods, keep up the great work, love from Australia. Love that. Australia.
Nice. So you cool. You went to Fan Jam, Oladipo one, right?
I did not go to Fan Jam.
You got the video from Fan Jam.
You ripped the video off the Pacers website from Fan Jam. Yes, they did do a three-point contest. Vic won, but it was only corner threes. It wasn't like a real all-star style one. And I'm assuming because of the timing of the question that we're doing all-star rules.
I think Bojan wins if they move more.
I agree. If you have to go to the wings and the top of the key. Well, the top of the key, Miles is hitting all five.
Yeah, but Bojan's hitting like the mid-corner.
The wings.
Three. The wing, that's good. The wing threes all day.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Oh, well, you know what? Would McDermott win this one?
Oh, on the move.
Right, yeah. You think McDermott even was in it last year?
No, McDermott, it depends. Where are they having it? Is it in Charlotte for the All-Star events? If so, McDermott would win. If it's in BLF, then no, McDermott would not win.
Oh, fair enough. let's put it this way. Would the final two be Vic and Bojan again, or would it be McDermott?
McDermott might be in there. Collison's sneaky from the corners, but no, I don't know.
I feel like Vic has the mentality where he somehow makes the finals.
Yeah, I think Vic, Bojan, McDermott is a good final three. The skills challenge is tripping me up. Sabonis probably wins that one.
Not Holiday.
Holiday has a good shot. That's a good point.
Quick dude. He's got good handle.
Who can hit the Tatum half court shot to win it?
Well, I mean, it's Vic. Vic's the answer there.
Yeah, Vic Holiday and Sabonis.
I think Holiday would be a sneaky.
Oh, he's so quick with the ball.
Well, and it depends. Are you doing brackets? So you have a center bracket, a forward bracket, and a guard bracket too?
Well, Sabonis wins the center bracket, so that's
yeah.
Or the final is Sabonis versus Holiday or Vic.
Although, would Thad win it? Maybe. No.
Maybe.
He's still, no. Well, who's faster, Thad or Sabonis? Probably Thad, right?
Probably Thad. Yeah, I agree.
So that might, but Sabonis actually is, well, Sabonis is a better three-point shooter, right? He's shooting like 100% this year.
All 14 he's taking, yeah.
I mean, 110 percentages.
That'd be the hardest. That's the hardest one for me to envision. Man, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it leaned Vic. Aaron Holiday is where I lean.
Yeah, man, that's a good one. Dunk contest, Sumner has a good shot there. Vic, obviously, because he was in the event last year. Who else would be good there? We love the McDunk contest, so McDermott has to get an honorable mention in this one. Darren Collison and Tyreek Evans are apparently competing to have the most dunks this year, but they're both at one, so neither of them are in this. So I think we only have three contestants. We have McDermott, Oladipo, and Sumner.
I'm just trying to think if Thad or Turner could do it, but I don't think they can. Turner's too clunky with the
Turner's ball. Dunks are awesome. But they're in-game awesome, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he's kind of clunky with the ball. He's not smooth with the ball. He's sort of just kind of like, oh, I'm open. I can glide to the rim from here. Oh, right, I'm really tall and big.
Maybe Alizé could be sneaky good in this.
Yeah, I actually think you're probably hit on the head with Sumner. I mean, he's the most player mind out of the gym athletic in terms of length. Yes. And
he has some nasty dunks in Xavier.
Yeah, and then
like at the rim.
I mean, Vic again. Vic's the answer because he's the most athletic of any of the guys. But like in terms of the non-Vic guys, I think Sumner's the best bet.
I agree. I am with you. That'd be fun.
And you know,
All Star Weekend.
If Vic's in all three, he's going to be tired by the dunk contest. So,
oh man, that was a good question. I enjoyed that one. That's all right, cool. Another guy who was asked a question in the first episode. Love it. Tell the truth 31 at m.imhot says, after watching the last game versus the Bucks, Sabonis guarded the Greek Freak the best, in his opinion. Wow. What are your opinions when the Pacers face them going to that matchup? Sabonis does not have to worry about three-point shooting and can match his physicality. I can tell you that Wes Matthews did not do a good job guarding Giannis in the last 4 minutes of that game. I'm
shocked by that. Just stunned.
So Sabonis did the second best job to me, I think. Thad proved to me in the second matchup that even on an off night of defense like that one, that he is the guy who has to do it.
Did you see Thad's response to Bucks Twitter?
I did. That was hilarious. Oh, they had to back down so fast.
Yeah. He was like, you know what? He played well. It got me this time. We'll see him again, I'm sure.
Yeah. I love that, like, they literally them talking crap is them acknowledging, like, he did a fantastic job.
Thad's also just, I'm an overall good guy. I think.
He's not
overconfident in himself and like cocky. He understands he has his limitations and but he tries his hardest every time. That's how he kind of gets guys.
To the point of the tweet, though, I do agree that the style of play Giannis offers does cater well to Sabonis's defensive skills, which is like on the ball and guys who don't have a shot.
Well, also the question is, what is stopping Giannis? No, so like it's holding Giannis to 27-8-8. Is that a good game?
Yeah, probably. That's
right. I mean,
all the averages.
Well, it's kind of like when they used to play LeBron. It was like if you held LeBron at 25 points, which PG did a couple games, that was like a huge win. Yeah. I mean, it's like, and that's not, I mean, because like LeBron just could score 40 on you whenever he felt like it. So when you're playing Giannis, it's almost like playing 2008 LeBron, it feels like, where it's like really the goal isn't to stop Giannis, it's to make him make some bad passes and really just stop everybody else. And just, you know, if Giannis can score 50 to beat you, you make him do that. Kind of like the way they made LeBron do that in the playoffs last year.
I think Thad's better at staying in front of him and not letting other guys help. I think Sabonis is better at staying in front of him. And then if he forces the miss, grabbing the rebound. And I think that having guys not having to help as much is way more valuable in this instance.
And I also think Thad's offense is less needed than Sabonis when he's in the game.
Yes.
Where you don't need that in the offensive end, you can put him in the corner and let him rest, where you need Sabonis to be an offensive playmaker at times, at least when he's with whatever unit he's on the floor with.
I agree. But good observation, because that was not talked about, that Sabonis did not actually totally suck in that match.
No, and that's the thing is like the good thing about the East going forward is like they're similar model players. So like how you guard Giannis could be how you kind of guard Simmons. And so there's kind of like maybe that's the kind of the goal of the Pacers is either develop a guy who can kind of guard those weird hybrid wing centers.
Yeah.
Or find a guy or whatever it is. Cause like that's probably how you get through the East. I guess Tatum is more small forward than kind of, he's not really a hybrid kind of guard. So the Boston doesn't have anybody like that. Toronto, I guess, is Siakam.
Kawhi. No, you're right.
Well, I'm not saying Kawhi's going to be Toronto, so that's – I'm thinking long-term. Long-term, the best four guys in the East moving forward could be Simmons.
Simmons, Giannis, Tatum.
Tatum, Siakam, and Beat. Those are probably like the five young guys you have to kind of beat per se. And so clearly there's a theme of like you need this kind of good power forward guy who can guard center kind of players.
Yeah. Yep. And that's that right now.
Yeah. That's fair. And maybe the guy's maybe Sabonis is the guy you trained to be that. Maybe that's his best value going forward.
Adam, I should have prepped you for the next question.
Oh, no.
No, it's not an oh, no.
Oh.
Probably one of the biggest fans of the show, definitely. Gary Cook says, yes. As you know, huge fan of the show. How can I help grow your listenership?
Oh, God. You know what, Gary? Just keep being there for us, commenting on stuff. We enjoy it. It just, you're doing, we don't even know how to grow listeners, to be honest. So, we can tell you an answer. I don't know if it worked, but just keep supporting us because that keeps us wanting to do this podcast is kind of when we get that good moral support.
If you actually are curious, ratings on iTunes are a good start.
Yes.
Tell your friends to follow us on Twitter. we struggle with those questions too. So if you have suggestions on how we can be better and grow better, let us
know. I mean, we're always open to, you know, would you like certain, like what would you like to see in our show, stuff like that. You know, I'm always open. Like, I mean, we've discussed ideas of how to do kind of a different segment in some shows. Like we would, if you guys, something you like to see different in each show in terms of like, oh, you should do this kind of segment. Like we did for the month of we did trade deadline segments, stuff like that. Like we're always open to that ideas, you know, whether it's maybe even like a fan voice mail thing you talked about, like we're always open to those kind of ideas. Cause those are always helpful and kind of, what do you guys like to do? Like I know this last summer we did the call-in thing. Like people seem to like that. So I don't know, if you guys have ideas like that, we will be happy to listen to them and figure out how to do them.
We've also discussed internally doing t-shirts before, but we've never brought it up on here. If you'd ever get a shirt or a sticker or something like that, let us know.
Well, stickers would be cheaper. So that would be a good option to start with.
All right, back to basketball questions. This one made me laugh because of his aunt. Grant Burnett, whose Twitter handle is at 8.9 seconds, actually all spelled out. He got it before that 8.9 account could actually get it.
Told you guys, man. Could have made
that. I know. Yeah, I was going to say, we all pay the money for it. Anyway, Grant, good job getting a good handle there. Says, I've heard you talk about Bojan's defense being subpar, but he seems to be average to above average at times on players with less lateral quickness. I agree. Do you think he could be a viable option as the four in large minutes? We've briefly discussed this, but not enough. So let's do this.
I think we agree with that. I mean, I at least do that maybe is his ultimate future, is like he's a stretch four playing three off the bench a little bit, but in the starting lineup, he could be a stretch four just because he's got the body type. I guess he's kind of can take on more traditional forwards in terms of the post game. And if, as long as the guy isn't like super duper fast, he can stay in front of them.
You could view, like, what about this for a free agency idea, just off the cuff? You offer Thad and Bojan low ball deals, and if either of them take it, you just keep one, and that's your four, you know? Just figure out which one will take the lesser deal and keep that one.
The problem is, I would say with that it seems like if you could get a really good guy to be your number two or number three, whatever you want to put Turner, and you put Thad and Bojan around those guys, that starting five could be really good because it has lots of compliments and chemistry and just things that are like, that might be the move in two seasons. But like, I do feel like, at least what I've noticed, the way Thad and Bojan played this year, it makes me think they can do it again next year. And there might be this little extra window of those guys being really good contributors on a championship team. And that's, you know, if Thad and Bojan are your fourth and fifth best player, or fifth and sixth best player, whatever you want to call off your bench, I think you might have a team that, I mean, in your 8-9 deep, like assuming Toronto loses Kawhi and they get kind of gutted in terms of death by that. And, you know, let's say Boston loses Kyrie and let's say Philadelphia loses Jimmy Butler. I mean, the East is all of a sudden wide open and none of those three things they just said are out of the reason of possibility. Like that's probably a good chance it could happen even. So,
yeah, I agree.
You might have a window next year.
Yeah, the thing with Bogey at the four that makes a lot of sense for the Pacers is Pritchard loves that type of guy playing the four. And I think when they signed McDermott, they envisioned him playing there more. I'm not really sure what happened there because that kind of happened earlier in the year more often.
It's that you can't play that kind of guy next to Sabonis a little bit, I guess.
No, not – well, you can, but – you need a wing defender because there's a lot of blow bys and they don't have any.
They don't have the small forward defender.
Really. Yeah. Yeah. I remember they tried to sign David Nwaba this summer. That would have been a good help for that second unit. But I think in Pritchard's mind, that makes a lot of sense. And I like, you know, Bojan is the like you said, the secondary scorer guy. He's done a fantastic job in that role. But at the same time, Thad, I think, is the best player on the team now that Vic's injured. Like, he's super good at everything.
But Bojan's been playing like good, to be honest.
Oh, he's been playing amazing. He's up to over 18 points a game. That's wild. And you said something about how you think their games will age well, and I wanted to agree with that because, you know, we talk about them all the time, and never once have we been like, he's beating him with speed or jumping over, you know, things like that. It's all like footwork and timing and, you know, the veteran know-how.
That's timing is incredible. I mean, incredible. His timing on tip-ins, I wrote about it, I think, back in December, but I just watched every game. I'm like, how the hell did he tip that ball and shit?
Or like a player drives to the basket to lay it up. Thad ducks in right when the defense is completely clamped down and can't recover to him. Like, stuff like that, he's just so good at.
He's just a really smart player. I mean, you can tell he's been in the league for, what's his 11th season this year, something like that?
Yeah.
The thing I could see, I mean, I just – with Bojan is if you signed a long-term deal, that's a long-term plan, I think, is put him at the four over time.
I agree.
And, you know, with McDermott, I don't know if it's a question about him, but I think the McDermott idea now is sort of like he's that nice little middle piece counter you can put in a deal, honestly. I think that's why you signed him. No, I mean, you need those $7 to $10 million contracts to put together in a deal. So, I mean, that might be the thought with McDermott. I mean, I think it hasn't worked out that well with McDermott, but we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll get a better team next year.
But if Leaf keeps out playing him, then they won't bench Leaf. So it is what it is at this point. Good question, though. We on this show are advocates of the Bojan at the four.
Yes.
That's a strategy. All right, another guy.
But not McDermott at the three and Bojan at the four. That's
correct. Yeah, Bojan at the four next to a wing defender. Drew, who asked the first question in the first episode, but it was a long time ago, and then responded to this tweet, so he gets two here. At Jolly Drew says, let's get macro. I never get my hopes too high, given our inability to acquire a top 10 player going to the tax, but I'm in love with this year and last year's teams. What are realistic expectations for the franchise in the Oladipo, McMillan, Pritchard era? Are we good with that being the era?
Yes. That's probably the next, 3 to 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, you'll call it that. You'll look back on it and call it that era.
Maybe we just call it the Oladipo Turner era, to be honest.
Yeah. Like Adam said, you know, like if the free agency shakes right this summer, you know, they could be one of the best two teams in the East next year.
So I guess, is it reasonable to say that if they make one finals in the next 5 years, that's a successful run?
Very. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
If they make 4 Eastern Conference finals, that's not?
No, that is completely successful to me.
See, I don't know. I think you need that one finals.
I'm really high on the conference finals. I know a lot of people aren't, but I am.
See, though, I would say the only reason I'm not is because the Pacers have been there how many times before? What, 2?
I know.
2 in 2011. 12,
like the
13.
Conference semis, like me and you, obviously we love the NBA. We'll watch every game. But like to the person who isn't just like a diehard NBA fan, I feel like the conference finals where they watch every game, you know?
Oh, the most fun I've had a Pacer fan was watching the conference finals.
Pacers. Oh my gosh. They were so much fun.
I mean, I would even say Pistons Pacers.
Yeah.
That was my first year I became a fan, and that was incredible. But like you look back, I mean, the problem is if you keep going conference finals, I mean, they've been to a lot of them. It's not like this team is like, I'm trying to think of a team that's been terrible. I mean, the Suns were good at one point. What's the team that's been
getting
terrible
there so much without LeBron to me is just like, that's so crazy.
So let's just say if they were the Hawks getting to like 2 or 3 Eastern Conference finals, it'd be great. Prentice has been there, one time, right? The Hawks have been in the Eastern Conference finals once.
Don't the Hawks have a championship?
The Hawks have a champion? No, when do they have a championship?
Yeah, they do.
From when?
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
Like the 30s?
Hang on. 1958. Sir.
Okay, so that does not count in my head.
What?
I count post ABA NBA merger. Okay, what? Realistically,
you can't do that.
In terms of like fandom, I can, because like what fan is a Hawks fan in 1958 that's still up? There are probably a few, but how many?
Unbelievable. It's like unbelievable.
Okay, but you know what I mean. As a franchise, like they've been to, I don't know how, I can't count how many Eastern Conference finals, but I'm sure it's somewhere
between.
They
weren't even the Atlanta Hawks then. They were the same. They were the St. Louis Hawks.
Then I'm fine to say that. They've been, what, to 8 to 10 conference finals, I have to say, probably?
I think the conference finals are a big deal. Maybe that makes me, like, a sucker who doesn't have, like, aspirations. But
no, it is a big deal, but when you've been there as a franchise, it's less of a deal. You know, it's
kind
of
really
like...
They had Dominique Wilkins and never got to the conference finals. Sorry, I'm stuck on the Hawks.
That's because they were stuck in the Jordan, Pistons, Magic, or, like, Magic, the Magic with Shaq era.
Knicks. That is true.
And the Pacers were also in that era a little bit, too. They were good. All in that time.
That is true.
But that's why I think,
look at this. The year they did really well and won 57 games, they lost to the fifth seed Indiana Pacers in the playoffs.
Good Pacer teams. That's why I think one NBA Finals is successful.
Oh, I almost set that bar for success.
I mean, not successful, is great. Sorry, great.
That would be great. I success think expectations, is, yeah, I would say like one or two conference finals is my expectation.
Yeah, I think also it would be really great to be a one seed. That would be like,
that'd be awesome.
You know, it's a close to 60-win team, which theoretically this year they were on pace for, I mean, they're still on pace for, what, 53 wins, but they probably could have won 57 if it had been healthy the whole year.
I don't know about that high, but some high.
They were, I mean, they won.
Their march is just so brutal.
That's true. We don't know what's going to happen there, but if they had Vic, we'd feel more confident.
Right, I agree.
So.
So, last thing on the Hawks, sorry, you made me look this up. They have like the eras broken out by like the Bob Pettit era and then relocating to Atlanta and then the Dominique Wilkins era. Guess what 1994 to 2005 is called?
Ooh. Was that the Doc era?
It says average times with a Josh Smith jersey. That sucks. That's just mean.
Well, like the Hawks made the conference finals won in 2015.
Like, it was like the greatest thing ever. Back on the Oladipo era. Saying average times with a picture of like a Bojan jersey, I'll be sad.
But like, no. But think about it. The Hawks made a conference final in 2015. It was like the greatest thing ever. The Pacers made it in 2012 and 2013 and 14, and it was good. But it wasn't like they hadn't been there before. The Larry Bird era, they had been there a few times.
Yeah, you got a point.
And
there.
That's how I call that whole.
Well, since we drifted from the question, this is mostly my fault. But I think my expectation would be one or two conference finals from this group.
Expectations probably that success.
And the final question, are we good with that? Absolutely, yes.
Yes, 100%.
Emphatically, yes. Jake Brooks at Indiana Brooks says, I'm not sure the best way to ask this. Do you think tanking is truly a viable option for building a team? It seems like people will only accept that as the only strategy the Pacers need to take to win a championship. I think the Sixers have ruined the concept of tanking in people's brains because they're the only team that's gotten away with like that level of it with success.
And you remember that Philadelphia is a free agent destination.
Yeah.
I mean, JJ Redick went there. He didn't really want to come to Indiana. He signed here for the money, but he didn't want to come here. Redick wanted to go to Philly.
Like, obviously, Simmons and Embiid, like, springboards the process a ton, but they had to win. They won three lotteries, folks. Like, that's crazy.
And honestly,
it took the Cavs winning two to convince LeBron to come back. Like, that's the problem with tanking is, like, I know it seems so good because of that, but like winning the lottery is hard. And now with the new odds, it's even harder.
Well, and think about it. So let's do the Cavs. They won three lotteries and got one legitimate all-star out of it. Like one legitimate good player out of it. They traded Wiggins, but like if they kept all three, they got one good. Now there's the alternative. They've taken Vic and they could have, I mean, Wiggins, who was the guy that Wiggins drafted that was really good? With Wiggins, Jabari, was Giannis later in that draft?
He is 14.
Damn. No, Giannis, that would be two. Is that Turner's draft?
I don't remember.
No, that was the year before Turner's draft.
2013 NBA draft. That was Giannis's draft, buddy.
2014, you mean?
No, you're right. Thank you. I'm wrong. Dang. Why is Sports Illustrated reliving the picks? This draft is horrible. Yeah, that was Giannis's draft. And Sports Illustrated has his last name spelled wrong. That's funny.
Nice. So, I mean, there are scenarios, but it just takes a lot of luck. And then Philly, on the other hand, they picked what in the top five or top five or six?
They got Simmons one, Fultz one, Embiid three, Nerlens five,
and Jaleel
three.
So they were two of five, theoretically, right?
They were two of five.
So that's what you have to do. And they're, I mean,
five,
that's turn.
Five. People want to tank 1 year. It's like, no. You got to go. You'll be in a new stage of your personal life by the time they maybe are good next.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get Spurs lucky. Let's put it that way.
It is. Yeah, they just had David Robinson get hurt.
So, like, tanking would make sense if, like, Oladipo got hurt the third game of the season. And you're like, screw this year. We'll try to go in off of Zion. Maybe we win and we win the lottery. You get Zion, Vic, and Turner as our future. But like, it's not long-term tanking is not a solution, because then you get stuck to becoming the Magic, the Kings, the Suns. I mean, these are teams that just have have basically probably pushed away all their fans. And, you know, I think there is some saying to, you know, when Simon and them and then Bird and Pritchard said, you can't take it Indiana because fans won't come out. And the fans do support a team that tries. I mean, you saw the game after the Wesley Matthews, the first home game, it was a packed crowd because the fans perspective, the Pacers were still trying. Even though I don't agree with the signing, it was at least the symbolicism of trying to keep winning is what made the fans want to cheer the team on.
I'm with you. I do not think tanking is the best way for this team to build.
No, it's not.
Considering they've never done it since 1989, and they've been at least, at worst, like, kind of bad.
And honestly, you would just hope eventually somehow the karma gods would fall their way. And they would, you know, some 20-second pick, like Jimmy Butler turns into the Jimmy Butler, something like that. Like, you just...
Well, yeah, and their three best players since Reggie have all gotten devastating injuries. Like,
well, and you got to think about the guys they've gotten that have been really good. They picked Ranger at 17, Reggie at 13. Yeah. They picked George at 10. They picked Turner at 11. I mean, they picked Hibbert at 17, I think, one year. They've never picked inside the top 10.
Wait, that was wrong. Smith was our last top something pick, whatever.
Smith was two. He was the year after. He was in the Ewing draft.
That was wrong. Who am I thinking of? The one right after him was 10, and it was a good player. Anyway.
Reggie went right after, close to that, at 13.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they've done it, and they've been able to get good players outside of that. And they, to be honest, they drafted Kawhi at 15 too. Technically, yeah. So I mean, they somehow know how to draft. I mean, they can, and maybe eventually, you know, the case would be that the Pacers like this season should just have gone for like a 12 pick because that would have given them a better shot. But the draft this year isn't very deep. The Turner year, they knew the draft was deep, and they were okay with, they were competing with the playoffs, but they knew at 15 they still got a good player. I mean, didn't Booker went like 14 that year, right?
Yep.
So that was a really deep draft. And so I don't know. It's what it is. And I just don't think long-term tanking makes sense because it just makes this team not fun and probably ultimately means they're going to end up in Seattle once Herb Simon does, if they did that at least.
I don't think that would happen. Anyway.
Oh, I think if they tank, they would. The team would, Herb would die, would sell, and they'd be in Seattle. But they're not going to be that way. They want to keep winning, so they're not going anywhere.
Next one is a unique one. I like it. Lee Woodbridge at Lee Woodbridge says, what do you guys think of LeBron buying a team when he retires? If he did, and if it was the Pacers, I think it could be good. A champion wants to win. Would he be a better owner than MJ? I like these kind of questions.
So I do not think he's buying the Pacers because I don't think the Simons are ever selling that team. Because
that's LeBron would own the Cavs and own the Cavs only.
No, I don't think that's so true. I think he'd buy any team if he got an opportunity.
Fair.
It's rare. I mean, teams don't come. I think the more likely situation is he becomes like the president of a team and gets some shares and ends up kind of being like the Elway of a team.
Yeah. You know what's funny about Jordan is like Jordan is loaded and he won't even pay the tax. Like, who's to say LeBron's going to be this good owner who'll pay the tax?
You know what? I'm not sure Jordan won't pay the tax. I think he's waiting until he has the right team to pay
the tax.
That's
fair. That's fair.
I mean, that's the thing is you have to be careful. Like, you don't want to just pay the tax to pay the tax to become the Wizards.
They won 48 and he tried to improve and it did not work.
Yeah. And Jordan never got a team because it was right at this point where people undervalued NBA teams. The team was in terrible financial shape and they kind of just got it because he took on a bunch of debt and he was willing to. I mean, that's the way NBA teams are going, I mean, by the time LeBron's able to retire and buy a team, it might be like the lowest price team might be $3 billion by then. I mean, all we know, the way things are going. But
with Twitch and gambling coming on, teams are worth so much right now.
Yeah, and you have to remember, too, the Simons are from Indianapolis. They own a business. They started in Indianapolis. I mean, this is a family that, like, is Indiana bred tied to that city. And that's why they bought the team, because they love the city and stuff like that. I just don't see... You know, I think his son lives in Indianapolis too. When he gets the Herb Simon, some will inherit the team probably, or some combination of his son and other kids. So I just don't see them wanting to sell out of the family. I think they like the city too much. I think they feel like owning the Pacers kind of somewhat of a civic duty too, because they do a lot of other stuff with the Pacers in the community that helps out, stuff like that. Like, I just don't see that ever leaving that family, barring like a huge financial crisis with their other financial stuff.
Since LeBron's contract with Nike is $1 billion, yeah, I'm going to go with he's going to be a good owner. I think he would be better as a Jerry West role too, though, like you said.
I mean, I don't know how LeBron's going to be able to afford a team, to be honest, if they're selling for $2 billion.
Yeah, he might.
Because remember, on that $1 billion, he's going to tax to hell on it.
I don't know how those transactions
work. Right, on a $1 billion contract, he's probably going to be taxed like forever.
I don't know. Again, I don't know how they work.
I don't know.
I don't know how any of that works.
How much do you think he's worth, $500 million right now, LeBron?
That's a good question.
Let's look it up real quick.
If I was going to say, if only we were on our computers.
Oh, yeah. If only we weren't always on our computers at all times.
$450 million is what I am seeing.
That's what Ford says.
Yeah. That's still a crazy amount.
Yeah, but like to own a team, he probably needs at least $1 billion, if not more.
You're taking on hella debt at that
point. Well, he could probably piece together a thing of like where he owns 40% of it and has a bunch of partners, and he's kind of the majority share owner.
Imagine the banana crew buys a team together.
That won't work. Too many egos. LeBron has to get a bunch of people who don't care about being
that's true
running a team. They just want to be an NBA owner.
You think Melo's really invested in the team?
No, and I bet Melo and D-Wade and Chris Paul all have their own opinions about what players should do. Like, LeBron needs like a bunch of rich guys who just want to sit in suites and watch games.
All right. Next up is another big fan of the show, Zach Pearson. At Zach A. Pearson says, what will Miles have to do to become an all-star in the future, and will the Pacers ever get another all-star with Vic? Well, to answer your second question, if Miles becomes an all-star, yes. I know that's not what you mean, though. How does Miles become an all-star? He's pretty close right now, given the run of play he's had since December 1st. I don't know what it takes to get him on the map of, like, this guy clearly deserves it beyond, like, more consistent scoring, because that's what people would see.
I think a Pacers being a one seed gets him two all-stars. That I don't too. Know. I don't know if that's Turner in Vic or another guy in Vic, but I think if they are the one seed.
Good point.
And remember, Drew Holiday and Mike Conley aren't all-stars.
No, Drew used to be an all-star, Adam. 2013.
And he was in the East then, right?
Yeah, he was.
That's what I mean. So granted, make Conley be one in the East again, too. But just saying, like, they aren't recent all-stars, either of them, but they are. But you consider them all-star players because they're top 35 players.
They'd have to get another all-star with Vic. I think they will eventually. They'll have to trade it. It's just how it is.
Yeah. I think Turner, though, I think if they're the one seed next year, there's a real possibility Turner.
You're right. You're right. He's been close to that good for about a part of 2.5 months now.
Yeah. I think, this is the Turner. The way we've had him 2 months might be the future Turner for the next 4 or 5
years. Yeah. What he actually has to do is score, basically. I mean, he's good at
everything. But like 16 a game is all. Like if he had 16 and 8 with
three blocks.
Yeah, good point. Really good shooting splits, and the team was really good. Like he'd be sort of like kind of Gobert. He could be the Gobert of the East.
That's true. We got 3 more. Can you do 3 more?
Yeah, I'm ready. We have plenty of time. Right. We're only at like the 45-minute mark.
You're right. I'm not paying attention to the clock. 3 more, 2 from one person, and 1 from a person who's already asked one. At Dom Hit 'Em Up, who was already on. Dom says, how do you feel about Joe Young dominating in China?
Good for him. I'm happy for him.
That's it. There's like Pierre Jackson dominates in China.
Well, remember that asshole who tweeted at him something really awful and mean?
Yes.
And Joe Young came back at him like, screw you, I was in the NBA kind of thing. And it was like, yeah, good for Joe Young. He make that money, man. Just make the money.
Joe Young was an awesome dude. And
do you think he ever gets back in the NBA as like a 15th guy?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think we'll get a training camp call next year.
He's still definitely young enough.
27. Did you know that?
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. That's still young enough to get one more shot. I mean, once he hits 29, 30, he's out of the league forever. But if he can get one more shot and make a, you know, get on like a really bad team and then have some stats, which he could do possibly, you know, he'd have a shot.
Yeah, he, some of the dudes who dominate in China, you're like, okay, never mind. This is nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it might be nothing, but like if you could get him, I mean, he had some flashes as an NBA player. He had some flashes, certainly. You could get him on a team that's tanking, that is just playing guys to lose games, and he puts in some stats. That could kind of be his way back in the league.
Yeah, that has been it for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But like, here's the other thing. I already said him once, but Pierre Jackson, Jimmy Fredette, Darius Adams, you know, all the former NBAers, Jamal Franklin, who go to China, never come back. They just don't. But Andrew Nicholson, Shabazz. Shabazz came back. Shabazz is the story.
Yeah. But I would say, versus Fredette versus like Young, I feel like Young had more flesh as an NBA player than Fredette ever did. Like, that could be me. I don't know Jennifer's career that well, but I feel like Young, didn't he have a couple like 18, 20 point games even last year for the Pacers?
I don't remember.
I think he had an 18 point game against the Wizards. He had a couple. I mean, let me look it up real fast, but I'm pretty sure he had that one game where all the guards missed, and so he ended up playing.
He started once, you're right.
Yeah, I think it was against the Wizards. He had a pretty good game.
He was against the Wizards. I remember that. His leading scoring game last year, he did have 20, but he had 20 against the Timberwolves.
Oh, okay. He had 17 against the Wizards. So he had two games last year where, like, oh, this he shot 5 of 8 from 3 and 3 of 4 from 3 and 7 of 11, 6 of 10 from the field. Like, those are – that's a flash. I mean, Holiday's basically been that kind of player maybe for 5 games this year instead of 2, but same concept.
Yes, you're right. He did have a few good games last year. He, he just couldn't stick. When they drafted Holiday, I think that was his coffin right there.
Yeah, and he just – he wasn't ready to be a backup point guard, and that's what they needed. Nope. Like, they didn't have more time to develop, and they didn't really want to deal with the 27 on development.
If they drafted a wing, I bet he's still on the team. Because he had another non-guaranteed year.
Yeah, I just think they loved Holiday in the draft, to be honest.
Yeah, no, they made the right call.
Well, maybe. We'll find out again.
Yeah, true. No, I'm confident saying that Holiday over Joe Young is the right call.
I mean, who knows? I guess Holiday already won them like 2 or 3 games, so.
All right, the last two questions are from the same person, so that's easy. Man, I'm going to butcher trying to pronounce this, even though it's a fake name. Christo Pacers Fur at CHJ Carey, who's gone under many names. I think I've called him a different name every time I've called out his
Twitter. But he has the same profile picture. I remember. He comments a lot of stuff.
Yes.
He's a very, very loyal fan. We enjoy his comments.
He was on the fan shows, yeah.
Yes, he was. That's right.
Yeah. He said, his first question, who would you rather see if you're the Pacers in the second round of the playoffs? Raptors or Bucks? Those are the only two options we've given. And if you were the coach, what would your rotation be for the current roster, sans Victor Oladipo? I like that because there's no reason to bring that up, but you did, and that's cool. Between the Raptors and Bucks, I think we both agree with the Bucks, right?
Yes, we both kind of said that in the last podcast.
Yeah. Not that I think it's like so much easier, but it's the Raptors I just think are better. Come playoff slowdown. The second question, the rotation question, is good. You know, you obviously want the younger kids in there more than I do. But I think you have to go 10 deep. And
younger kids. I want the one younger kid in
there. Yeah, that is young. You're right. You're right.
I'm on,
yeah,
I don't you care don't about want, you or leave, to be honest. I care about Holiday.
You don't want my boy Teej out there.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just don't
someone
care.
Someone tweeted at me and said I was leading the Leaf torch. I was like, if thinking he's been better than last year leading the Leaf torch, then I guess I am leading
the Leaf torch. Yeah, I would say you're the most prominent Leaf supporter in the Indiana.
But I don't even like believe that much more in him. I just think he hasn't sucked and he's earned like trying to get minutes. But I guess that if that's leading the Leaf torch, then I'll do it, man.
I gotta look up this guy's last 10 games right now.
You're okay. I can't wait for this. Yeah, I think I'm cool with I'm personally cool with where it is now. I wish there was a little bit more like mixing and matching, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like it's always the same with starters and then the 3-guard, 2 centers, and then Thad in the bench, and then Kojo in the bench, and then the starter, and then it just cycles. I wish there was a little bit more mixing and matching just to, you know, I think there's some puzzle pieces that could fit well together. But overall, I personally have liked I think Nate's good at rotations.
All right, so I think the starting five is fine. I like Wes Matthews in there and moving Evans back to the bench for sure. I think I'd like to see a little more Sabonis and Turner together just because you have the opportunity to try it.
Yeah, frankly. I'm cool with that.
I would like to see it in a little more, you know, I mean, maybe you take that out earlier in the first quarter or the third quarter and just kind of try to ride it maybe like the 8-minute mark of the third quarter on, and then you bring that in the whole fourth quarter and something like that. I'd love to see kind of that kind of move more. Holiday, I would like to see get more minutes. I don't know whether it's taking from Evans or whatever it is, because I think actually Matthews is better than Evans, so I'm actually fine. But I just think you can drop Evans in a little bit down. Leaf, I'm not sold on. Leaf's last 10 games, I got it pulled up. 9.1 minutes, 64% shooting, 28% from 3, 4.9 points, 1.7 rebounds, and a minus 1.5 plus minus.
Yeah, the three-point shot disappearing is very concerning.
Yeah, that's the destiny of a guy who's going to be the 12th man for a few years and be in China with like Joe Young and by 2022.
Yeah, but you got to, like with Joe Young, you got to try, man. You just got to try.
Yeah, man, I just can't. I don't know what happened to Leaf, because you watch Leaf in college and he had such a unique offensive game, and you see him in the pros and he just looks like a child out there.
So to me, I started this in the 8.9 Slack chat, and everyone's like, what? But now we're kind of far enough in that it has validity. Like, he's a below-average three-point percentage, like, for his career now. So I'm wondering if, like, the small sample size of his first year and playing with Lonzo in college really inflated the perception of him as a shooter. Now, I don't think he's 21.7% from three bad. I think he's better than that. But I think we might have an inflated view of what he can actually be as a three-point shooter.
But the thing is, the only way for him to be a quality NBA player with his defensive deficiencies is to be a 48-40.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to be a guy who was like, okay, you can't put E, but you knock down every single 3-point shot we give you almost.
Because he's hitting 65% of his twos. Like, he's found more efficiency this year, which is amazing.
Well, and to be honest, he has a very unique offensive skill set. I mean, he does. I mean, he's got the ability to – he's tall, lengthy, he can put the ball on the
floor. I think he's really good at positioning, like really good at
offense. Really, if he could just, like, get bigger, he could kind of be a mold of Thad Young with a better 3-point shot, but he's just not big enough. Because you watch him out there, and he just looks like a child out there. I mean,
not quick enough, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the quick enough thing is I can't tell whether it doesn't have the speed to play it or just not, like, the game is moving too fast for him to react. Because Thad, it can just, like – always react really well to the game around him.
That's
where
true.
Leaf kind of is like okay, it's like a child. He's kind of lost out there. And I don't know if that's coaching and that's Leaf not figuring it out yet. And maybe one day it clicks. Like maybe that's right. Maybe you hold on Leaf for 3 years because it clicks somewhere in between the second and third year. I mean, remember Solomon Hill couldn't figure it out for 3 seasons. And all of a sudden it clicked. I mean, granted, it only clicked for about 35 games, but it clicked at some point, and all of a sudden you had a guy who was really good helping you in a playoff run. So maybe it eventually kind of goes off.
Yeah. It's kind of clicking, but not really. Not all the way. Not
I
really.
Mean, remember, I mean, really, I mean, I know Turner is a different level of clicking, but like it finally took Turner really this year to really click into the defensively and offensively in a way that I think was like really impressive. And on a smaller scale, it might take Leaf more time.
Did you know 14% of TJ Leaf's makes this year have been dunks?
I mean, it did not surprise me. He does have a couple of really athletic, nice looking dunks a couple of times.
Crazy. That's a crazy high percentage.
I mean, he's Davis. What, he's 6'10". His wingspan is ridiculous. I mean, of course,
I was looking up the number of dunks of everyone on the roster for something I'm working on earlier, and I saw that. I was like, wow,
14. And he's made some good blocks. I mean, I've been impressed by some of his defensive kind of like, oh, wow, nice block. He was in the right spot.
These little suble things, you know, these matter a lot to me.
It's about getting it all to click. And just we're not even talking about a guy who needs to be like playing 30 minutes. It's just being able to play 20 minutes of like, I understand where I'm supposed to be. I can hit my shot consistently, and I can play a little good D.
We just sat here and said, like, Joe Young just, like, if they don't draft Holiday, he gets, like, one more chance. Like, with the Young, it's kind of what we're thinking with Leaf, right? Like, year one, Joe Young sucked. And then year two, Joe Young was, like, kind of bad, but doing a little bit better. And then year three, it's like, okay, like, Joe Young's fine as a third point guard. You know, I think that's a fine trajectory to follow Leaf on. Now, for a first-round pick, that's still bad. But –
and one of the deepest drafts in NBA history.
But you compare it to first year Leaf, and that's something.
I think I've talked myself into the thought that he is getting better, so you shouldn't give up on him yet.
I think, yes.
Especially as cheap as he is.
Yes, for those of you who have made it to the end of the mailbag, I did it.
The problem is I don't know how he plays rotation minutes.
I know, I get that.
Like how he cracks a lot, like without being all of a sudden better, because like, this team wants to win games, and they just can't play him and win games. They don't have time to let him develop. And that's probably the biggest issue with Holiday, where at least Holiday at times feels like you don't have to babysit him. He can just go out there and be an NBA player for small stretches, where Leaf, it's like tiny, tiny stretches you can be out there.
Are you ready for a kind of hard last question?
Yes, I am ready.
From the same person, at CHJ Carey, Crystal Pacers says, if you're a scout, how would you game plan for a historically average 3-point shooter that is on a hot streak like that is? How much success would it take before you change your mind about that player's successes? That is a great question.
So let me pull up Thad's stats real fast for his.
He's like, shooting something like over 50% from three over the last
So he's 35.6 in the year, which is really good. I mean,
that's awesome.
Well, even really for a stretch four kind of player, I mean, that makes him a legitimate stretch four at least.
So Caitlin wrote about how there was a problem for the Pacers earlier this year where, you know, last year teams kind of were like half and half with Thad because he shot really well when he started in Indiana. But this year everyone's like, okay, this guy can't shoot, and they're just laying off of him a ton. So I think a lot of it's based on like a blend of prior season data, like the actual teams use, which makes a lot of sense, you know. You want to know like what law of averages say.
His biggest thing this year is that he gets the ball and isn't – like a lot of time when you don't guard 3-point shooters, they get kind of in their own head. Like an Andre Roberson thing was he got psyched out and then couldn't make a three forever. Like Thad gets the ball and just shoots. You don't think about it. Or he tries to make a play. But like he doesn't let it like get to his head, oh, they're not guarding me. He's like, I'm going to take the shot.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Figure it out.
But the question is how we would do it, not how the team would do it, which changes everything.
So can I read some of Thad's stats real quick?
Yes.
So since December 1, he's shooting 42.9%. That was the marker I kind of put because really for the first 22 games, he made, I think, all of three threes. So then if you eliminate that down to January only, I believe it's at 50% on the dot. But let me just refresh this real quick. Yep, it's 50% on the dot at 1.7 wow. attempts per game.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm thinking hard about this. I'm a love averages guy, so I'd probably play it as their just career percentage.
I mean, yeah, I think.
But that's risky. I get why that's super risky.
I do think actually his 3-point percentage is probably closer to his 2016-17 season than it is to his 2017-18 season. Right? He was 38% in 2016. Okay. So, and that's about where he's at right now. I mean, if he's 38%, he's legit stretch four. Like, that's what Draymond has to shoot to be effective at times. I'm pretty sure that's kind of their goal for him. Where he's at now is good, and it's good in certain stretches. I mean, he's shooting his hot streak. So, I don't know. That's probably, he's probably at where he should be currently.
Like, I'm gonna, like if you're going to tell me, hey, the, you know, if the defense collapses, you know, your option is defending this dude with this dude with a contested layup, or having this guy who's made less than 33% of his 1,200 career three shoot a three. I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll take the second one. Like, defend the layup, you know. I'm not gonna like that. That's the adjustment, right? Is how far do you sag off of that guy? Because everything else is like, if he's wide open, then it doesn't matter how far you sagged off. It's an organic shot. But you know, a situation like that, I think you just have to play the law of averages. 1,200 attempts is a ton, and like you can get better at a skill, but you know, you can look year to year and say, okay, yeah, I'm not afraid of this guy.
Okay, but let's do this. If you go back to 2014-15 and you look at like every other year, he's had a 38% shooting. I mean, he has this weird, it's just like all up and down. Like one year he gets to 35 with Philly, which is pretty good. Then he has a bunch of really bad years. It's like, then one year he took a ton of threes and he shot 31%. Like, I don't know. I think if he's open, he should take it because that at least makes the defense respect it. And he's hitting enough rate where they have to respect it. And
see, like, but like McDermott's been cold, and I'll be damned if I'm ever laying off that dude.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And the thing too with that is, if he's making at a good rate, kind of the way Turner, same kind of concept, then what's a more effective, that shot or all the people contested the layup when he was at his peak? Right. And I don't know. And that's a good question. But like, teams are just double teaming Oladipo because they just think the layup's an easy point for Oladipo. So then he has to give it up to those guys. And that's kind of what you got to do.
Maybe,
you know,
maybe for every percent Thad goes up, I scoot one half inch closer to him or like an inch.
Well, like if he finishes the year shooting 38%, 39%, which I don't think is actually unreasonable.
Oh my God, he'd get crazy money too.
Well, that 38%, that, and he has to be, he'll, teams will again respect him next year, and that will be,
yeah, that'd be nice.
But then the problem is too, when you get to the playoffs, you don't know how a team's gonna play. Right. And so like the thing I like about Thad is that I don't feel like he's not like clutch. I feel like he's, you know, in big moments he can step up because he's not afraid of it. So like in the playoffs, for example, if your team is leaving him open, he's gonna make the three and he might make you pay by shooting like 5 of 8 one game if they really leave him open the entire time.
Yeah, you're right. You are correct. It's a tough question because I don't have to make these decisions today, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, thank God I'm not a coach. I'm just a critic.
Yeah, it's fun to be a critic. Thank you guys all for submitting questions. I think our next mailbag will probably be before the playoffs or maybe after the playoffs.
Yeah, March sometime probably. There's a lot of games in March, so maybe not in March.
Yeah, that's why I chose that time, so there's actually a gap there. Yeah, but thank you guys so much for submitting questions. We love doing these. They're fun. We hope you enjoyed it too. I will be back Friday to talk Pels and Wizards. Two teams missing stud former Kentucky players. Adam will recap all the action on Sunday. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll see you guys soon.